Hey folks, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT Podcast. Today, we're going to do a little bit of discussion on the Crike case that was posted a few days ago. And if you haven't watched that video yet of one of my former residents performing an awake cricothorotomy, then this podcast will make no sense. So you should stop this one and go to the cricothorotomy Wii that happened a few days ago. It's in your iTunes feed, or it's linked in the show notes for this episode, found at mcrit.org/148. So after watching that, and now you're back, you can understand it was a little bit controversial. And what was unusual is most MCRIT episodes, when they're released, in the first 2 or 3 days get about 50,000 downloads. This one, in the first day, got 200,000 downloads. So basically, there's 3/4 of those downloads by people I don't think really normally listen to or contribute to the MCRIT podcast. And as a result, there are a lot of people out there who may not have the same familiarity with my show or with, I think, the foam world in general. That's my opinion, is that these people are not generally part of the foam world, at least for our specialty, emergency medicine, critical care, resuscitation. And as a result, there was a kind of discordant note through some of the commentary that went with that we. And if you've been a listener to MCRIT for any period of time, you know we are very open about differing opinions on the things that are discussed on the show, and people comment and have their own viewpoints, and it's one of the best parts is I have such an actualized audience who provides a variety of viewpoints from a variety of specialties. And on the other hand, this we, I think because of people who don't have the same familiarity with the foam world, the comments were in a very different vein. And I'm going to discuss what that is at the end of this podcast. But there was one comment in particular that after I read it, I just said, forget this, I'm closing the comments on this podcast. And I'm not going to identify who made this comment. I don't think that's worth it. But it was a trauma surgeon. And here's the actual comment itself. Unfortunately, this crike does not appear to have been necessary. Oral airway after cutting the wires or a nasotracheal tube placement would have been appropriate. Good thing you were lucky. There's no such thing as an elective crike. Parenthetically, probably like a procedure invented by ED docs. A crike should only be performed on an emergent basis. Otherwise, a realm of airway options are available. Finally, when was informed consent obtained? Before or after? Either time period would seem coercive and not in the nature of informed consent. So that was the comment. And I closed the comments after that. There were a bunch of other comments of similar nature. And I did not close the comments because of the medical questions raised. Those actually are welcome, but the way they were done. And I'll talk to you about that in a little bit. But first, I want to discuss the medical issues because I find this extremely interesting and worthy of a podcast because this video brought up so many great questions. So why don't we talk about the medical stuff first, and then we'll talk a little bit about online etiquette. So what that video brings up is how to go about planning your airway management when things are a little bit out of the ordinary. And I think the best things that go into that planning is taking account of the whole situation, both immediate and delayed issues that your choice of airway management may raise, and then picking the plan that fails best. And we'll go through both of those. So both in the comments on the Wii, as well as a couple other forums around the internet, and I've linked those in the show notes, there were a whole bunch of options discussed. And one of the options I think is a hideous idea, and that is anything through the nose without cutting the wires. People have suggested two ways of going about this. One of them was the blind nasotracheal intubation without cutting the wires, and the other one is the fiber optic nasotracheal intubation without cutting the wires. And I think both of these are really, really bad ideas. Why? Well, the blind nasotracheal approach, which is often lauded by people who have had a few years on them, because that's when this was at its height of utility, before the advent or the ready availability of fiber optic scopes, this was an accepted intubation technique. There was no RSI. If you had a patient who needed to be intubated, then this was a way to go without having to stick a laryngoscope in the mouth, and they might tolerate it better. This, I think, is a technique that should just be placed solely in the history books. What has replaced it, and I think is a much better technique, is fiber optic techniques through the nose. The blind techniques, yes, they can work. I would say for most practitioners, they're not going to work nearly as well as the scope techniques. And anything through the nose has the potential to cause two things. One, epistaxis, and that is not uncommon, especially when you have to move quickly, or vomiting. Now, I think you need to remember the context of this patient. This is not an awake intubation in the operating room. This is a patient who has already had two ventricular fibrillation arrests and now is having continuous runs of VTAC that spontaneously revert to sinus, and then the VTAC comes back. Yes, this patient's blood pressure is okay, and he's sitting okay on non-invasive positive pressure ventilation. This is probably a patient you want to have a definitive airway sooner rather than later. And this patient is breathing on his own. He is responsive to pain and he does follow commands, but mental status not great, somewhat obtunded. This is what we call a metastable patient. You have a little bit of time. It's not a crash airway. And yet you would not want to take maybe 10 minutes to do a really nice awake prep, not to mention most of the parts of an awake prep rely on access to the mouth, which you don't have unless you cut the wires. So for all of those reasons, I think any nasal technique that you're not going to cut the wires in is a really, really bad thing. If you go in there with this awake patient and your scope causes retching and then vomiting with the wires still intact, that's going to be a really bad situation. I don't think this is in any way you could argue a good idea to go through the nose without cutting the wire. So then let's discuss what, to my mind, are the four good options for this patient. Number one, you could cut the jaw wires, you could prep the patient for crike, and then perform an awake fiber optic nasal intubation. And then after the tube is in, you could sedate an analgesic, and I think that's okay. I don't think it's the best option, but I think that is an acceptable option. I don't know what this gains you over the next option, which just is foreshadowing actually going in through the mouth after cutting the wires and just performing RSI. So I'm not sure what you get out of this. The only thing you get is the patient's jaw could then be immediately rewired. You could have OMFS just put new jaw wires on. The arch bar is going to stay intact, so this would be easy. And then you have the patient with a wired jaw and a nasal airway intact. But I don't like managing patients in the ICU with nasal airways. It's not a horrible thing. Don't get me wrong. If you went this path, I don't think anyone could fault you. But I don't necessarily see what the pluses are, and the minuses are you have to prep for that awake intubation. It's going to take a little bit of time. These techniques, I don't know if the patient's going to get agitated or has some pain, if that's going to be enough sympathetic surge to put them back into VFib or VTAC. I'm not sure if the pluses outweigh the minuses on this one. Let's move to number two, which I think is a very acceptable option. And to remind you again, that is you cut the jaw wires, you prep for crike, you perform RSI. There's no reason, once you've gotten into the mouth, you make sure the mouth does open, that this airway should be any more difficult than a normal airway. Again, making sure the mouth opens. And, 2 weeks in, it probably will open well. And then after you get the tube in, you sedate and analgesize the patient. So what are the pluses of this? Well, there's good ED familiarity with it. RSI is what we do. And you have ready access to the mouth. You've already cut the wires, so that seems good. What are the disadvantages? Well, the disadvantages are primarily what I think most of the commenters that weren't savvy to the emergency management of a post-arrest patient really weren't thinking through. Most of the snarky people were thinking, huh, how do I manage this airway immediately in isolation of what else is going on with the patient? What else is going on with this patient is right now you have a post-arrest patient who is following commands, who is interacting, whose mental status is not pristine, but you could hold off on induced hypothermia. It's going to become pretty tough after you perform your RSI, and now with either a nasotracheal or orotracheal tube in there, you're going to have to provide definitely analgesia and probably some degree of sedation. It's going to become potentially harder to maintain that this patient does not need induced hypothermia. I'm not saying it's impossible. You might just do what I've always advocated, which is just the right amount of analgesia, minimal sedation, or sedation that could come off and allow you to do sequential neurochecks, and you convince yourself that the patient does not need to receive targeted temperature management. But I'm not sure if the ICU is really going to buy it. It's going to be a lot more work and potentially puts the patient at risk that if they do drift off to a lower state of reactivity, if they're no longer following commands, it might be missed whether or not they now deserve targeted temperature management. And this patient, the ICU might very justifiably just say, I'm not going to risk it. I'm just going to now induce this patient, or I'm going to put them on, you know, 36 and leave them just straight up TTM. But either way, the patient now has an extended ICU course. They're going to be exposed to all the hazards of being in that state, potentially for a situation they wouldn't have needed it in. So that's the only downside I see for not doing oral RSI. But if you went down that road, I think it's fine. And I don't think anyone would fault you for it. Obviously, like I said, you've already prepped for Crike, so you have the ability to recover if it didn't work out. And I think it's an acceptable option. Now, let's go with option number three, which is actually what the team involved in this case chose. They performed an awake cricothyrotomy. What are the advantages? Well, the patient's awake, so you're not burning any bridges. There was a lot of comments about, oh, well, the awake crike doesn't fail well. No, the awake crike fails wonderfully. As long as you have a modicum of idea what you're doing and you stay midline, there's very few bad things that happen with the awake crike in distinction to the crash crike. The worst that comes out of an awake crike is either you can't find the anatomy, which should have been foremost in your mind before you made the decision to go that road. This patient had beautifully palpable external anatomy, so that wasn't going to be an issue. Bleeding in this patient who wasn't anticoagulated at the point the crike was being done, who had any known bleeding diastasis, there's really very few things you could cut in the midline if your location is chosen properly that won't be immediately amenable to direct pressure. So bleeding, not really a huge issue in this patient. And why do? What's the advantage of the awake crike? The advantage of the awake crike is it fails well, and the patient now does not require any sedation or any large amounts of analgesia beyond what you would need for a laceration. That's kind of great in this patient because now they could continue to assess what's going on. They could assess the patient's chest pain. They don't need to provide targeted temperature management or induced hypothermia unless the patient's mental status significantly declined. That's the advantage of an awake crike. That's why it's not a horrible option in this patient, and some might argue the best option depending on whether you feel comfortable with the procedure. Another downside, the patient will have a scar. Now, I've watched my own crike scars progress over the course of months because I've been lucky enough to have patients I've performed cricothyrotomies on come back, and they're going to have a small, very thin anterior scar on their neck. And that is a downside, but I don't think it's a huge downside. It's definitely something to consider. But again, weighing the pluses and minuses, I think either option number two or option number three are acceptable. And they went with option number three. And I don't know exactly what I'd do in their circumstances because I can't put myself in their exact circumstances. But depending on your institutional comfort with the provision of cricothyrotomy, I think you can make an argument for either of those two options. Now, the last option is a very good option. Some of the more experienced intensivists who have commented on this said, I would have just performed an awake tracheostomy on this patient. And I think that's absolutely fine. Most ED docs don't have experience with awake tracheostomy, and that's not in their option list. If it is on yours, ED intensivists, myself, some of my friends, we probably would consider performing an awake tracheostomy if we actually had the PERT kit available to us and the patient's anatomy was good. That's definitely an option. I don't think it necessarily transcends awake cricothyrotomy as an option. Both are good. And if you went with option number four and that's in your skill bag, great. No problem. So there you go. Those are, I think, the four good options. I don't think option number one, the awake fiber optic nasal intubation, brings anything good to the table, except that the jaw could be immediately rewired. I probably would consider between option two, three, and four. Most ED docs could consider option two or three. And if you just didn't feel comfortable with your cricothoracotomy and wanted to go with option two, standard RSI after cutting the wires, no problem. It does bring up the issue, how do you go about cutting these jaw wires? And if you don't know the answer to that, then that is a big problem because you need to know how to do this. So go to the show notes, mcrit.org/148, and you will find out how to do this. But in general, the patients will have arch bars on both their mandibular and maxillary teeth, and these arch bars will be joined together with anywhere between 2 to 5 wires. At least that's been my experience. They will have 2 to 5 wires surrounding these lugs of their arch bars. Usually I've seen 2 on each lateral side and 1 anteriorly. Sometimes it's just the 2 on each lateral side. But what you need to do is cut each of these wires. And I have videos there as well that'll guide you through this. It's nice to have specific wire cutters made for the job. And these should be in your difficult airway cart. I know at the institution where the video took place, Janus General, they have wire cutters in the airway cart. I know this because I put them there myself. And so those were available. And it's not hard. You just cut the wires. If you don't have those, then any kind of wire cutters will work. And if you can't find any wire cutters, heavy scissors will work. They're not ideal, but you can get the job done. And you need to cut the wires and then grab them with hemostats, pull them off the lugs, and get them out of there so they don't fall back into the airway when you finally open the mouth. It's not tough, but you need to have thought how to do this before you actually have an emergency situation. Because if you come in with a patient with a wired jaw and they vomit, it's not really a great time to be looking at this, seeing a whole bunch of hardware in the mouth and having no idea what you're doing. So go to the show notes, mcrit.org/148, and figure this out now if you don't know how to do it. Now, some of the other comments on why a awake cric shouldn't have been performed were this now needs to be converted to a tracheostomy relatively quickly. And the fear is subglottic stenosis. It's probably unfounded. I have 2 articles discussing this issue in the show notes. Both of them say the same thing, that the fears about a cric needing to come out right away and be converted to a tracheostomy are all predicated on very old literature. In fact, 100-year-old literature that, or I should, maybe it's not that long, but at least decades old literature saying these patients all inevitably get subglottic stenosis. When you look at the crics that were being performed, they're not the crics we do now. They're crics where they actually divided the cricoid cartilage or went in through the first tracheal ring. They were really suprathyroid cricothyrotomies, not cricothyrotomies through the cricothyroid membrane. And should you manage a patient for 2 weeks with a cric? Absolutely not. Can you manage a patient for 2 days with a cric? Yeah, you probably can. And when you look at the current literature, that's probably okay. And so, no, you did not have to immediately take this patient to the OR and get the tracheostomy in. So, again, elimination of a minus for the awake cricothyrotomy as an option. Now, the original commenter, I referred him or her to the NAPFORCE trial, and he or she looked at that trial and said, I have no idea why you think that is relevant to this video. And the quote that I think is directly relevant, and I'll say it here, Rich Levitan directed me towards this, is, in appropriate circumstances, prophylactic cricothyrotomy has numerous advantages, not least the potential to secure and check the rescue airway in a calm, unhurried manner without hypoxia before an emergency arises. And it puts forth the idea that a prophylactic cricothyrotomy is okay and has numerous advantages. That's why NAP4, and they have an entire discussion about this in the study. So if you didn't find it, go back and look again because it's there. And no, cric shouldn't be only in a crash airway. It shouldn't be only in a last-ditch airway. It should be considered for any patient with facial trauma or other reasons like this wired jaw case and the associated situation. And it should be considered early before other airway techniques have failed in some patients. The shotgun blast to the face is the quintessential case for this use of an awake cricothyrotomy. That's the medical stuff. Let's talk about why I closed comments after seeing this comment. And just to remind you again about some of what was said, unfortunately, this cric does not appear to have been necessary. Oral airway or nasotracheal placement is the way it should have been done. That's what would have been appropriate. I'm paraphrasing here. I hope you understand that. Good thing you were lucky. That's what was said in the comment, for all intents and purposes. And in fact, in my interactions with this trauma surgeon, it seems he or she thought I had performed this procedure, which doesn't make any sense. If you listen or watch the video, it becomes obvious since I was talking to the people involved that I didn't. But regardless, this is not the kind of comment I want to see on the MCRT site. Not for the medical questioning. That's all good. But for the way it was phrased. That's not the way you should discuss someone else's case. That's not how you should do it in person. That's not how you should do it online. And if you believe Brent Toma and I about this stuff, how you represent yourself online is probably a pretty good indication of how you represent yourself in person. This is not the way you want to come across in either venue. You want to be nice when you're online, especially because people don't know you necessarily, and they're not getting all of the facial expressions and the smiles and all the other stuff that sometimes temper what could be, in print or online, harsh words. You should always assume that the factors going on in the actual case that you were not present to may have caused techniques that don't seem immediately obvious to you when looking retrospectively at them. And then I think most important when you're online, you should probably phrase things as something similar to, I think if I was in this situation, I would have, and then go on to say what you think. Why phrase this way as opposed to the way the original commenter phrased? Well, because it opens a dialogue. It allows the person involved in the case to actually come back and say, oh, no, I thought about that, but here's what was actually going on that precluded it. Or I thought about that, but here's why I consider my way. And it opens people to talking about things, discussing, you know, actually having a good interaction, as opposed to, you were just lucky that this went well, and this is not appropriate, this is not necessary. You know what that does? It closes dialogue. It kind of makes the people involved have no desire to talk with you about your viewpoints. It kind of makes them feel that you are not the kind of person they want to interact with. And if that's what you were going for, excellent. You succeeded. But in general, in the phone world, that's not what we're going for. We're going for open exchange of ideas. We're going for people discussing things in a manner that leads to collaborative thought. And this original commenter and many of the other comments that came subsequent that caused me to close the comments, they were not in that vein. You also should probably be pretty smart on the topic you're talking about. And this has nothing to do with that commenter that I'm talking about, the trauma surgeon, because I bet he or she is very well informed, and this is their exact ballywick. And I'm not saying they should have used this as a reason not to comment at all, because this is exactly the kind of person you want commenting. And I want to hear the opinions of trauma surgeons, because they are a great resource for these kind of cases. They have a different opinion than mine, but a very valid opinion. No, this relates more to the online forums. Some of the people there are very smart, very knowledgeable, and had the skill set and knowledge base to comment. Others, not so much. So you should really consider whether you have the right experience to be able to comment on this in a nasty manner. If you're going to comment as a question or as a just a, hey, I was thinking, then by all means, you know, you could be a first-year medical student and comment on it. But if you're going to be nasty, you probably should know what you're talking about first. The last part of this commenter's query was about consent for filming. I don't quite know what he or she meant by that, but I will tell you this. At Janus General, where this video was filmed, they have department-issued or hospital-issued cameras, which are used for filming, for documentation, for the medical record, and for quality assurance. And then if they want to use the video for any kind of educational stuff, where it'll go outside the auspices of a QA process, they have to get written consent from the patient, and that patient consents to allow it to be used in whatever limited or expanded venue they are asking, and the patient could say no or yes to any of that. And in this case, the patient was okay with it being posted on the internet, and they had that in writing, and that's why it was able to be put here. I don't understand why that would be considered coercive. The patient was at pristine mental status at the time that the people involved in the case actually got this consent. It's an established process, and I have no idea what the commenter meant by this, except that it seemed kind of not nice, and I don't know why it was said. One other thing that I don't want to dwell on, but it just continues to irk me, is the parenthetical discussion after the there's no such thing as an elective crike. Probably like a procedure invented by ED docs. That seems pejorative and very much in keeping with the worst side of the interactions ED has with trauma surgeons. As most of the listeners know, I have been through now 2 trauma fellowships at the Shock Trauma Center with some of the best trauma surgeons I know of in the world, and they never had this issue. They work collaboratively with all departments. I think they are really the highest level of professionalism when it comes to interaction with other departments, and they taught me that trauma surgeons absolutely exist out there who get along with all the other groups in the hospital, and I think that's how it should be. Another exemplar of this, Kenji Inaba and his group, Dimitriades' group out in USC. I mean, just a perfect example of a beautiful interaction between trauma surgeons and ED. Maybe I misinterpreted this comment. Maybe he or she did not mean it to be pejorative at all. That's how it came across. Another reason that I turned off the comments, and I'm actually going to invite this trauma surgeon to come on the podcast and see. Maybe I misinterpreted that, but it just seemed kind of... not so nice. All right, I think we've run a little bit long, so I'm going to stop here. I would love to hear all your comments in this episode. I'm not going to close the comments. It is distance now from the video. The video could exist as an educational work without all of the snarky, nasty Monday morning quarterbacking. But you could put all of that here. Anything you want to say, I will not close the comments no matter how nasty you are. The Crike video will exist on its own, and you could put anything you want to say here. So if the original trauma surgeon wants to comment here, great. I'd love to have you on the podcast. That would be even more fun. So that would be swell as well. If any of you from the Reddit forums or student doctor forums want to come over here and comment, put them out there. I'm not going to censor any comments. I'm not going to close comments on this episode. Please try to be nice. It helps your point get across better, but you knock yourself out. All right, Scott Weingart, MCRIT Podcast, saying bye-bye.